When I was your age, I would lug 50 pounds of ice up 5-6 flights of stairs.
So what?
So what? So let's dance. I was alone. I never knew what could left me. Bah! Now, what the devil? The man's a menace.
Good afternoon, folks. Welcome yet again to the Sportsbook Box Office Podcast. Jeffrey Paul, what the fuck is going on?
Hello, Kevin. What's going on, everybody? Wow. How's everyone? I'm excited.
We got a lot going on. Well, today we got a special guest. I would say he is pretty much the Babe Ruth of sports handicapping. So for all you gamblers, sit down and take note, because Brandon Lang's going to call in about 10 to 15.
Beautiful.
If you ever saw that film, Two for the Money, with Matthew McConaughey, that's who the story is based on, Brandon Lang himself. But in the meantime, we got a lot going on, Jeffrey Paul. We have hockey playoffs.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, man.
Well, let's hit, I guess, since I said it first, hockey, the Rangers. Oh, boy.
Fuck them.
They got fucking bamboozled.
Yep.
Friday night. Up by one with 17 seconds left, they give up the tying goal, and then in overtime, with I don't know, a minute or so left in overtime, bang, caught with their pants down. They were just gassed that shift.
All right, great. So what's the excuse for fucking last night?
They just didn't show up.
Did you watch the game?
Of course I watched the game.
Let me tell you, I'm really on fire about this one. I can't fucking stand Mark Stahl anymore. Mm. I can't take Dan Girardi. Mm. I mean, turnover machines left and right. I mean, the second goal, man, fucking Girardi, you know, turns the puck over at the blue line, then falls, you know, over a phantom line on the ice. You know, guy comes in, you know,
swoops in.
Goal was beautiful. I mean, yeah. Also. Penalty kill sucks.
Terrible.
Power play stinks. Yep. Stinks. Okay? They roll out four solid lines.
Sure.
But they don't have a great line. You know? So if they're going to play, say, even if they get past this round, all right, and they have to play Pittsburgh or they have to play Washington, and who are they ever going to match up against? Malkin, Crosby. Ovechkin, yeah. Backstrom, that other guy on Washington, the Russian guy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that narrows it down.
Okay, but I mean, they just fucking don't have any star power. Like Rick Nash, I'm not even counting on anymore. He was done to me after 2014 in the LA Kings series where he didn't show up. I mean, he's you know what he is at this point. He's a nice player. He's a role player. He's not a star. Who's the Ranger star forward, Kevin? Please tell me.
Adam Graves.
Yeah, I love Adam Graves.
Who doesn't?
He was the heart of every fucking Ranger. I loved
him. Messier was the heart. Let's be fair.
You know what?
Graves is right there. Graves and Leach. Graves and Leach.
Love Graves.
That was like 1B and 1C right there. Messier was 1A.
I just can't take this Ranger team.
It's a tough pill. It's a tough. And this is bad because Henrik's on the way down. We all know that. He is on the way down.
But he's playing great.
He had a great game one. Game two was a bit of both. And game three, they had no heart. They were so flat. I mean, what are they saying? Al Trout was like, you know, they're down 1-0 in the second intermission, and then the lucky 1-0. Like, they were just pressuring the fuck out of them. And he was standing on his head, making a lot of key saves. And then, bang, 2-0 came in, and I was like, well, this is fucking over. And then 3, you're like, all right.
Once it was 2-0, you knew.
Oh, yeah. I went right back to the Yankee game. And they were smoking the Cardinals. But, yeah, no, the Rangers are just – there's no – do they win game four? And the Garden, which they've been horrible in this year, the horrible home ice, quote-unquote, advantage for the Rangers.
Yes, I say they win game four. I'm calling it right here. They have to win game four.
Do they get – when do they – all right, so it's 2-2 then. Where do you see the series going after that? I see they get – I see they make it to – I say they lose in
– Good question.
God. Everyone says 6. I say they lose in 7 just to be different.
I'm going to pick the Rangers to win in 6.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, is that just wishful thinking?
Is that
me thinking more from my heart than from my head?
Yeah, it is. I think it's a hard. I mean, they look so flat. Like that overtime goal. I mean, first of all, the game tying goal in front. That is going to be the play that defined the playoffs for them. That's when all the air went out of the sails. If you were to tell me they're going out on what's today? Do they play on Tuesday night? Then If you're going to tell me that they go out without a whimper on Tuesday, would I be shocked?
Well, listen, if they lose at the Garden tomorrow night, then they're going to lose in five. So that's why I think they're winning tonight.
I say six. I think they do pull it out of their ass. I think on the road they can pull it out, but they're not going to be able to get enough to go back. I think they could. Well, no, they would go back because it's 1-1 and more.
Yeah. So I think they win game four.
Okay.
I think they'll win. I think they're going to win out. I do, man. I just don't. Sometimes you got to have that bad game. Maybe this is it. I hope this isn't what the Rangers are.
Which is,
you know, a dead team that can't, that their special teams, you know, are just inferior to everyone else's in the league. You know, are they that bad on the power play that they've been showing? And is that power kill? I mean, the two goals that they gave, two of the three goals they gave up the other night were power play goals.
They're terrible. This playoffs and on the penalty kill, it's been rough.
But there's no other sport like hockey playoffs.
Playoff hockey is the best, and that coming from an ardent baseball and football two guy. I guess both of us are the same boat, baseball, football, really. But yeah, there's nothing better than playoff hockey. I mean, you got Pittsburgh, by the way, is going to shut out Columbus. What a bad draw for Columbus, by the way.
Yeah.
What a year they had. This is a year. I mean, how long have been in the league? 18 years or so. What was that? Oh yeah, that was you. 18 years or so in the league, and then bang, you're going to go face the Penguins and just get absolutely run the fuck out of there.
Yeah, that's what it is, man. Penguins are like they're a seasoned team. Remember last year they win the Stanley Cup. Only team to do it with three starting goalies, you know,
right,
throughout the playoffs. No team ever did that before in hockey. You know, Pittsburgh, they're just like, you know what they're like the St. Louis Cardinals or San Francisco Giants of baseball. Like, once they get in there, they're going to be always going to be a problem. And that's what they're
Or the New York football Giants, for that matter.
Yeah, the Giants are a good playoff team.
Yeah.
Except that one year that they got totally wrecked by the Panthers.
Carolina. Yeah. They didn't have a middle linebacker. They ran the ball for like fucking 200 yards that game.
Who was that? Was that an Eli year?
Yeah.
That was like a very early Eli year.
Mm-hmm. That was like probably 05. 06? It was around. He was definitely in the. He was definitely quarterback because his rookie year was 03.
Yeah, we got to hold off on. I mean,
yeah, I know.
I can't.
Draft's
wait.
Coming up. I know.
So we're not going to talk about the draft on this podcast, folks. But we'll get it. Like, after.
Send us your picks, sportsbook box office at Twitter. Who do you think's going where? Come on, all you Mel Kiper wannabes out there. What do you think? Number one. I mean, we could just tease it for a hot second. Cleveland. Who are they going to take?
Well, they're crazy if they don't take the outside, you know, the pass rusher from Texas A&M.
Okay. I mean, they do need defense. They need everything, though. That team's a fucking shambles, except for what's his tits? Come on. Terrell Pryor. What are you looking at?
Well, Terrell Pryor's gone. He's on Washington.
That's what I meant.
Now.
Jesus H. Christ. That's right. I forgot. Whoops.
You know who they replaced him with?
Oh, God.
He's a Jersey guy. Played for Rutgers.
I'm drawing a blank.
Kenny Britt.
Who can't stay out of trouble either.
He's okay player, but I mean,
they have
no one to
get the ball to. All right, so and then they have a couple first round picks though, Cleveland.
Yeah,
so they can get.
Do you have any confidence that they're going to do anything with them?
I mean, every pick they've taken though, it's kind of like you can't knock it. You know, I think you're like on paper, like all right, I got it.
I'm not convinced yet with this Cleveland regime, and I you know, I can't worry about Cleveland because I have my own fucking Jets to worry about.
Yeah. All right. Listen, we'll keep that NFL talk curb for a second here. We got a lot to go on, but we're gonna just kill in time until Brandon calls in here. I just text him, make sure he's good.
Yeah, but the hockey players. It's not only the Rangers series that's interesting.
Blackhawks are in trouble.
Blackhawks are in trouble. Yeah, who they play? Nashville, right?
Yeah,
they're really on a nice little roll. I mean, who they have? Pecorini as their goalie, who's, you know, listen. That's the thing about hockey. A hot goalie can steal the series. But, you know, you can't count Washington out, you know, until, you know, that last period. They're also, you know, with they won three of the last five Stanley Cups.
So. Yeah, I mean, you know, Kane is a monster, especially in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, right now, no one's doing anything on Washington.
I know. No, well, that's, you know, Chicago, I meant.
Chicago, right, yeah. Right. That's what I meant. So, yeah.
NBA, Chicago, I guess, the upset of the day, the Bulls. Knocking the Celtics down.
Yeah, but do you really look at the Bulls? The Celtics is a true number one. Well, are they a
Cleveland
real number
mailed
one?
It in. I mean, they really mailed it in the end of the season.
Is Cleveland that good?
We're going to find out.
I mean, how do you kind of like categorize that? I mean, I watched that game. That was like one of the nice things about doing like comedy away is that, you know, you're in a hotel and
with nothing to
do. We're fucking in Altoona, so there was nothing to do. So I'm sitting there watching, switching between the Bruins Senators game, which was a really interesting game, and then
the overtime game.
Yeah, and then the Pacers. Well, I didn't see the end of the game with that one, but then I watched the Pacers Cavs also, which turned out to be a great game.
Right.
And first of all, what's his name? Paul George?
Mm-hmm.
Shut up.
Yeah, I know.
Okay? You've never hit a clutch shot, you know, with under 20 seconds. I think he has the record. He's 0 for 15 in clutch shots. I mean, anyone who's ever taken, I think there's a stat. If you've taken 10 or more with under 20 seconds left, that's considered like, you know, buzzer beater shot.
Yeah, yeah. Okay?
He has the worst percentage of anyone who's ever done those shots.
Yeah.
He's no Joe Johnson.
He's no Jordan, but then again, who is?
LeBron.
Jordan's better.
Well, I'm not going to argue that. Yeah.
Some people will. Some people take that fight to the fucking bitter end, bloodied and all. I just don't think there's any. There's no comparison.
Best stuff I've ever seen.
I mean, me too.
But that was a heck of a game. Now, do you look at it as the Pacers lost that game?
I don't know. I don't watch any of it, so I can't comment because I didn't see the tempo and see who's dominating who and where and who was outboarding who and all that shit. So I don't know. I didn't watch a second of it.
I'm going to say it again here, man. I don't think Cleveland's reaching the finals.
Who's knocking them off?
Washington.
Interesting. Milwaukee looks strong on Saturday. I caught that one at the gym.
Oh, fucking Giannis is just sick. He could be the next main guy in basketball. He's dominant. He does everything great. Except hit free throws.
When's the last time Milwaukee had a top player? Ray Allen? Glenn Robinson?
Yeah. Yeah, wow. I forgot about those two.
Bang!
Yeah.
That's NBA that Jam out. Days, baby.
Yeah, that's old school guys. Yeah, I mean, Milwaukee's been irrelevant. But Giannis is the absolute real deal, man. He is such a great athlete.
Sure.
You know, he's a difference maker. I think Toronto always loses game one. Mm-hmm. Okay? So let's see how they respond in game two. You know, they come out, blow them out, then I'm starting to feel a little bit good about Toronto. But I thought Toronto, like, you know, at the trade deadline, when we spoke about that about 2 months ago, I thought they made some great moves adding Porter and Serge Ibaka. I thought, man, you know, they got some pieces that where they can compete with Cleveland. But the team that looks really good at the end of the year and you know they're gonna be a problem is Washington. As long as Bradley Beal stays healthy and he's playing alongside Wall, man, they're hard to defend, man. That's a great backcourt.
Right. No, it's good. It's a good point. We shall see. I don't know. Is Golden State going to get knocked off? You think they have any chance of...
No.
They didn't cover yesterday, by the way.
Well, you also had two guys play out of their minds in that game. I mean, Lillard and McCollum. I mean, they probably just shot their load and gave you the best that they're going to give you, and they still wound up losing that game by 12.
Right.
You know? That was a great... I mean, cause the thing is, it's like... The Warriors have the best backcourt, agreed, right?
Of course, even a question.
You know, Curry and Klay. Klay had an off game, and then you had, you know, again, very underrated backcourt in the Trailblazers. I think they're a top five, you know, best, you know, guard tandem in the league, and you know they gave you everything, and they still wound up losing the game by 12. Because here's the difference. Is okay, so they match up and right. Say even the Portland outplayed the Warriors. Then what happens is, how do you account for a guy like Durant? They don't, you know, and that's the difference, man. Because you know, you watch the game and you're like, oh, he's not doing much, Durant. Then you look at the score sheet, the guy's got like 32, 35 points very, very quietly, very efficiently, you know. I mean, I think if Portland had the guy, I think his name is Nurkic, you know, the guy who broke his leg about 3 weeks ago. I think if he's on the court, I think maybe it's a little bit of a different series. I think Portland could give him a scare. I don't think Portland gives the Trailblazers, the Warriors a scare in this, and I'm going to kind of go Golden State winning this in, going to go five.
Going to say five as well. We'll see. Anyone getting picked off, you think, in the early rounds? You think the Bulls have enough in them?
Yes.
They sure fucking showed it off yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, Jimmy Butler, you know, played great. And even though Wade, you know, you look at his stat lines, 12 points, I think 8 assists, you know, nothing to write home about. Key steals when he has to, and the guy's a gamer. And also,
he doesn't have to be that guy anymore. He did, you know, he was.
But you want him to be in Chicago. I think one of the reasons why they brought him in. And also, don't discount Rondo wanting to stick it to the Celtics a little bit.
Yeah,
still.
Yeah.
So, I mean, man, I didn't see that one coming, really. I really thought, I want the Celtics to do really well. I was really rooting for Isaiah Thomas.
Because of his sister dying?
Yeah, absolutely. But, and that was another weird thing this weekend, dude. Did you read that story about Todd Heap?
Yeah, his SUV, he ran over his 3-year-old. Yeah, holy shit.
Like he was moving or something.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's backing his car up. I mean, that's some unbelievably tragic stuff.
That hurts, man. That was a rough read. I'm like, oh man.
How do you come back from that? Well, I guess
OxyContin. I don't know. I can't even think.
Well, he has 5 kids, and that's the youngest. So you're like, well,
what are you trying to say, Jeff? He just saved $60,000 a year times 4 for college.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like, you know, goes, you know, only 3 years. How attached could he have really been to 3 years?
There you go.
You got 4 others. I don't know.
Listen, the oops he got knocked off. Is that what you're trying to say?
I don't know what I'm trying to say on that one. You trying to make like a dead 3-year-old joke out of one of the most sad.
If we had fans, they'd be flooding our inbox with hate mail right about now.
Good.
any news is good. So I mean, Sarge, Melissa Frenzy, call in with your disdain for killing a 3-year-old kids with an SUV.
So what's going on with the
baseball? Wow! As a Yankee fan, I am more than pleasantly surprised. Look, obviously this is not going to be sustained. I'm going tomorrow night against the White Sox. Watch them lose. They'll win tonight. Watch them lose tomorrow to when I go for my first game. But look, they swept the Cardinals. I mean, the Cardinals a little bit limping. They took care of the Rays. I mean, they started out 1-4 and won 7 straight. I mean, this, I don't know. This, the pitching, which has been the biggest question mark coming into this season, is Sabathia has been reborn, it looks like. He doesn't need to throw 95, but, man, his control is great. Obviously, he's 88 and 89, maybe hitting 90, 91. But Pineda's been pretty fucking solid. He'll have that one lights-out game.
That's always going to be him.
I know.
I think he'll go 3 good games, 2 bad games.
I mean, like,
to space him apart a little bit.
He has that one lights-out, like, motherfuck, that's a great game he pitches.
With the last game, when he pitched a
perfect game. No, he had a perfect game for 6 2/3. And it was like 2 years ago, Mother's Day, he struck out like 13. I was watching my brother at my parents' house.
It was 16.
16, there you go. Yeah, it was something crazy. He'll have one like crazy, and it's usually early in the season, obviously. And then he'll fucking, you know, peter off. I mean, Tanaka's been all right. Montgomery's tonight. He had a so-so start. The hitting's been fine. Greg Bird finally snapped out of his slump.
That's the thing you got to be excited about as a Yankee fan.
Sure.
Because if you look at how they're doing it, it's not like one guy like on fire. Like one, like yeah, Bird does nothing, and then he carries you last night. And then if it's not him, it's Judge or it's the guy filling in for Didi, Torreyes.
Yeah, Torreyes.
Torreyes,
5'8". Kid.
Yeah, listen, man, you know he's hitting pretty well. And then who would have ever thought Chase Headley would be a contributor?
Crushing
it. All they wanted to do was try and get rid of it, and no one's going to take this guy, and he's carried you a little bit. So I think as a Yankee fan, like, you got to be like, you know what? It's not like, you know, we're being carried by like 1 or 2 guys, and it's a hot streak, and it's going to end. You know, there's guys who are still going to heat up. So I'm pretty excited. I also, because I got him on my fantasy team, I'm watching this guy. You got to like the way Jacoby Ellsbury's playing.
There, you know, there's still, and here's what, and this is funny. You say that Girardi said in the press that he goes, I don't care. Gardner and Ellsbury's talking to me. He goes, I want you both to score 100 runs. I don't care how you do it. I want 100 runs out of either of you. And that's out of both of you. I'm sorry. Both, you know, 100 runs apiece out of you. And they're doing it, man. They're putting a lot of runs up on the board. Gardner having a nice year, too. And this is all
Ellsbury stealing bases.
Yeah, I know. And that's because, again, Girardi's probably just lighting a fire on that. It's like, look, we need you guys to score runs. And this is all without Gary Sanchez, by the way, who's fucking on the DL for a month with the torn with a strained bicep. Excuse me. This team,
but Austin Romaine's hitting.
He is.
He don't hit for power, but he's getting on base.
Yeah. I think he hit a bomb the other night.
Okay, but
yeah,
but he's not the power.
No, 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 no.
But you know what? he's what the Mets should have.
Right.
Because the Mets are all or nothing.
They are. And again, it's just great because you know why? This is the team that's going with the future. There's not a veteran on here that's been around for, except for Gardner. He's the longest tenured Yankee, especially homegrown Yankee. But this is all a bunch of new guys. And this is exciting. Like, this almost has that 96-esque feel to it, but they don't have as many veterans.
They don't have the pitching.
No, I know that. But I'm saying that the core group's coming up. The Judges, the Torres, well, he got traded, but the Judges and the Birds of the and the Sanchez. I think that I'm missing one more. Could they have a core four again? And those are three guys right there coming up through the system. You're like, all right, that's what you want to see. Homegrown talent rising up and finally starting to find its way together. And that's what they're doing. And early on, again, this is – I know it's baseball. I know we were in, what, fucking 12 games in the season, 3 weeks in. But it's got that good feel like, all right, this could be something down the road when you know, when it matters. And again, I was watching the other day when Bryce Harper hits a walk-off bomb with that beard of his. And I said, yep, you'll look good here in about 2 years without that beard, though, buddy, because that's what's going to happen.
Well, is he a free agent at the end of this year?
2019. Him, Machado, and fuck, I'm missing one more of those guys. It's going to be great. That's huge.
Well, Donaldson's coming up.
He's, I think, part of that class, too. So would have been Fernandez, by the way.
Yeah, right.
By the way, what do you think about that statue they're putting down in him?
I'm glad you brought that up.
What a fucking terrible idea that
is. I couldn't agree with you more.
Horrible. That's a bad job there, Mikey.
Wait, holy shit. What was that?
That's my Russo.
Do it again.
That's a bad job there, Mikey. That's passable. It's time to go to the Sour
who,
Shoes.
Who are you, Joe Piscopo, with these terrible...
Let me tell you something. One time. No. That's a terrible idea. Look, A, and Russo had this point. So I'm just reiterating what he said from this point was, the guy killed people while high as fuck. And drunk, you're going to immortalize him. My point is just from a generic sports standpoint. The guy won like what, high 20s games won.
I don't think he ever won 20 games.
No. Combined in all of his years, not in a season. I'm talking like combined. His lifetime stats. He's won like 27-ish games. The guy does not deserve a statue. You want to put a statue? Put a statue of fucking Josh Beckett because he beat the Yankees in 2003. Do that. Don't put up a guy who died way too young and high. But look, you can't immortalize him.
It was Make tragic, it, yeah. But I couldn't agree with you more.
Terrible idea. I mean, Stanton, he's the first homegrown guy there. But Stanton should have one if he pans out, even though he hits 220 and hits 35 bombs a year. But he misses 125. Sorry, he misses like 80 games a year, it seems. But yeah, you can't have a guy.
Who's the biggest star that the Marlins homegrown? Ever had? Yes.
Homegrown.
Was it Jeff Conine?
First baseman. No. Was Beckett out of that? Beckett probably was. I mean, not name wise though. You had Galarraga down there. No, he was in the Colorado Rockies.
Well, Galarraga started out with the Expos.
Yes, he did.
But was Beckett? You could be right about
Moises Alou was there, but that was after he came from the Expos. Yes, he was.
Yes, he was already.
Because Al Leiter was there. He won the World Series with them,
AJ Burnett is a Met. He went over in the Al Leiter trade.
I forgot. And they went to the Yankees and then Pittsburgh.
Right. But I'm trying – Beckett, you could be right. You're right. He could –
He beat us twice in that series.
He was a great pitcher. But he could be the biggest, homegrown guy that they ever had.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. I mean, no doubt about it, Fernandez was going to be that guy.
I mean, you can't say no doubt. You can never say no doubt. All you need is Tommy John, he's fucking cooked.
Right. But just let's say.
But he was on his way.
He was, right. He had everything. He was big. He was strong. He had that great personality. I mean, I went down. I saw him pitch in person. I mean, there was something electric about that guy.
Right.
He was one of these pitchers who you just, like Tom, like you're too young. You ever saw Tom Seaver pitch?
No, I didn't.
Okay, but I remember watching Tom Seaver. It was just something.
He was in the White Sox in the 80s, right? That's where he ended up?
Yep.
I remember that because he had his baseball card.
Yeah, he did pitch for the White Sox.
Yeah.
And then came back to the Mets. But there was just – there's certain guys. Maybe – do you remember watching Guidry?
Yeah. He was in the Yankees. I started watching the mid-'80s.
Guys who, you take the man,
Clemens, too. We saw Clemens since day one. Randy Johnson, Maddox, all those guys.
You can't compare Randy Johnson as a Yankee.
No, not as a Yankee. I'm saying when he came up, especially in Montreal and Atlanta.
But Fernandez had it. And, So as long as he would have stayed healthy, yeah, I mean, he was on his
way. He could have, absolutely.
But to build a statue about him, and then they're going to retire his number, and then people are going to ask, hey, what happened to the guy? And you got to tell that
That's
story.
That's exactly what Russo said. Yeah. That's exactly what he said. He goes, I don't tell my kid, you know, why this guy have a statue? You know, he died prematurely. He was a good pitcher. Well, yeah, how'd he die?
So what happened? And even if you're going to kind of fudge and someone looks it up, man, he was fucking loaded and killed two of his friends.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't mean to make like light of it because I felt awful when that happened, and I was a Jose Fernandez fan, but you can't put up a statue.
No. And again, you got other guys. I mean, you can argue Jeff Conine, or obviously.
Talk about – he's the opposite.
Wasn't Delino DeShields on that team? Yeah, no.
Delino DeShields.
He was a nice man. He was good. He's a nice masher. He was fine.
You know what he was? He was kind of like that 275, 280 guy.
85, 90.
Yeah, nothing special. You know, he wasn't a dog, but he wasn't far from a Hall of Famer.
No.
Wasn't a great defensive player. Delino DeShields was an original.
He's an Expo.
Expo.
Yep, 1990.
I think he may have came out of – no, he didn't come out of the Dodger organization. He was traded to the Dodgers.
Right.
In a trade.
He's dealt with Montreal first.
Yeah. Montreal, think about all those players that Montreal
96. Remember, okay, this is the World Series that just annoys me. That never was. The 94. It was the Yankees when they are 10.5 in first place. And they would have won, though. This is when everyone fired on all cylinders. But they had – Montreal had Randy Johnson, John Wetland, Larry Walker, Pedro Martinez. Todd Walker – was good then.
Larry Walker.
No, Todd Walker was the second baseman.
Todd Walker?
Yeah.
I don't even remember Todd Walker.
Larry Walker, like I said, he was a – I love Larry Walker.
Did they have Galarraga on the team?
Oh, I don't know. Without even looking at our phones. I think he was in Colorado then.
I think you're right.
Yeah, because I'll never forget. My favorite sports centers. I watched Larry – Andres Galarraga hit an absolute fucking moonshot. Next pitch, next at bat, he gets blasted in the back. He goes to the fucking mound. I forgot who was pitching. Charges and beats the shit out of the guy. I mean, that ball was like five rows from the top row in the upper deck, that ball he hit. He was a fucking beast, the big cat. But yeah.
Was Bartolo Colon on that team?
No, was he on Cleveland then or no? Well, I know he's in the late 90s. I don't know when he came.
He was traded around that time. Oh, no, he may have been traded right after because I think at that point they thought that – they were going to lose that team.
And that was
Omar Minaya was the GM. And do you remember who he traded? They got Bartolo Colon. And do you remember who they traded away?
Who they traded away?
Yeah. The Expos wind up getting Bartolo Colon.
Okay.
And the reason why they get Bartolo Colon is because they're afraid they're going to lose the franchise. So they needed to win. That's why I think he may have been on that 94 team. And they traded away three prospects. They were just prospects at the time. Okay? Do you remember who those prospects were? They all played for Cleveland.
Manny Ramirez has got to be one of them.
No.
Jim Thome?
No.
Wow. Omar Vizquel?
Omar Vizquel, no.
Who the fuck else was on that team? Charles Nagy? I'm going to all these
Charles Nagy, no. But one was a pitcher. One was a lefty who the Yankees really wanted.
Chuck Finley.
No, he was on
On the Cleveland Indians. He killed us. Chuck Finley was on the Indians. That's an absolute fact.
He may have been on the Indians, but that's not where he made his
bread. The Yankees wanted a lefty.
The Yankees wanted this guy really bad. He spurned him at the last minute 1 year to sign with the Phillies.
He was in a lefty. It's Curt Schilling.
No.
Curt Schilling went to the...
Not him.
I give up.
Lee.
Cliff Lee. I was thinking along the line of the 90s then because you were kind of setting that whole thing. I knew. But yeah, Cliff Lee.
Cliff Lee. And the other
you know why he didn't come to the Yankees? Because he said his wife got such shit when they were the playoffs. She's like, yeah, we're not coming here.
So yeah,
whoops. But he died. They were the son of a long... But that's good, though, because he had like another year or two. He was great. And then he fell off the fucking earth. Like, they would have given him like
a guy who was always hurt.
5 to 7 year deal. He would have eaten shit for the last 3 to 4 years easily.
But the other two guys that went in that trade, Grady Sizemore.
Okay.
Who was great until he got hurt.
Right.
And then the guy who's still playing to this day, Brandon Phillips.
The Reds, used to be Red second baseman.
Yeah, now he's on Braves.
Yeah. Wow, I didn't know that. Yeah, they were loaded Montreal because they always sucked. They always had the fucking top pick, like the Rays were for a while. And then the Rays finally, you know, did what they were supposed to do, and that's cultivate the young guys and get them better. But yeah, I'd say that 94 team would have been great. I mean, Mattingly was still – he was still hanging on. You had the pitching.
That could have pushed Mattingly going to the whole
thing. That was it. I don't know. Still,
if he get if Madden, ring? If Madden Lee had gone into a World Series, is the conversation different?
No. I'm the biggest Don Mattingly Lee fan. There is the man. I think this is our guy.
Okay.
Let's just make sure.
It'd be funny if it was Kevin's wife.
No, it's not. Is this Brandon Lang?
What's up, boys?
Brandon Lang, everybody. Welcome to the Sportsbook Box Office Podcast. How are you today, sir?
Man, I'm going to tell you what. If life were any better, just admit me right now. Call it a day.
I mean, you have a hell of a resume. Do we need to go that? By the way, my partner here is Jeffrey Paul. I'm Kevin Goatee. Yes, again, the Sportsbook Box Office Podcast.
Hello, Brandon.
What's happening, brother?
Where are you calling from?
Right now I'm in Florida, Jacksonville.
Oh, beautiful down there, right?
Yeah, but me being an L.A., New York kind of guy, my friends like to say I'm in the Witness Protection Program here in Middleburg, Florida. But,
what are you doing in Jacksonville?
Well, you know, when you're 54, your wife's 44, she looks 24. For everybody listening right now, if you Google Brandon Lang's wife, I so far outkicked my coverage. My wife is so fine. She's a dime piece. She's Asian. So if you don't know anything about Filipino women, they don't age, you know. I don't know if it's the miso soup or the white rice, but 44, they look 24. 34, they look, you know, it's unbelievable. 60's the new 40. 50's the new 30.
Brandon, have you ever seen Pete Rose, girl?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we actually, I got a great story about that if you want to get into that later.
No, get into it right now.
Yeah, right now.
He's also got an Asian woman, but she's unbelievable. Her family lives here. And I tell all my newly married friends, happy wife, happy life. So she's okay here. Her network, her friends are here. Her parents are here. I can get up and go and have my man weekend whenever I want it. So that's why I'm
beautiful.
In Jacksonville, Florida. But at the end of the day, happy wife, happy life.
You're in Jacksonville. Are you guys counting down the minutes until they put that franchise in London?
You know, for a handicapper, you don't follow the local team.
Right.
You follow who's going to cover and get you the money on Sunday. So you have to maintain the objective from that standpoint. I will say this. I bought into the home dog with those knuckleheads quite a few times, especially with Jack Del Rio, who buried me, which is another great story. I saw Jack at a matinee movie, and it's just he and I walking out of the movie theater. And I had my moment. I had my moment just to rip him and say, you know what? You could be. You have no idea how much money you cost me. Right there in the parking lot.
He's a big dude.
He is.
Yeah, he is a big dude. But I respectfully just said, do I really want to fight him right now?
They were horrible last year.
I wasn't as jacked up back then as I am now. Like right now, I look like I could play tight in the NFL. I'm pretty ripped and pretty shredded. I'm double what Matt was in the movie. Been in the gym for 6 months, and my wife goes, man, you've never looked better. I'm like, yeah, well, sex life's pretty good right now. So at the end of the day, I let it slide. But home dog Jags have buried me quite a few times.
They were shit this year against the spread. Last year, they had a lot of backdoor covers. But, I mean, Blake Bortles, I mean, he single-handedly likes to fuck people out of money, like you just said, in the last waning moments of the game. My God. How much longer do they hold on to him? That's the real question.
Well, the king of the pick six. But back when I was flying, we lived in Vegas. I was flying back and forth to Philly from Vegas, from Comcast Sportsnet in Philly. Wife usually picked me up. I fly in on Wednesday, do radio shows Thursday, Friday, and fly back Saturday morning. So I land in Vegas. It's like 1. My wife says, come on, let's go grab some sushi. So we grab some sushi at our favorite place right there on the strip. And lo and behold, we have our lunch. And as I'm walking out, there's Pete Rose with his Asian now wife and two of her friends sitting at the bar watching Navy Notre Dame. And I have, I believe, Navy plus 17.5. And they were trying to beat Notre Dame for the first time in 40 years, I believe it was. And I had Navy plus the points. So I'm like going, oh, my God, I'm going to pull it off. It's my best bet of the day. And he turns around. And first of all, he turns around and sees my wife. And as soon as he saw my wife, he's like, who do you got? Like, I got Navy plus the points. Now, this isn't like the early third quarter. So I'm not coming in where there's 2 minutes to go. I'm like early third quarter. He's like, ooh, nice call. I'm like, yeah. He goes, you got a money line? I said, no, I just took the points. And so I sat there with him. We watched the game, the rest of the game, the whole second half pretty much together, right there at the bar. The wives kind of hit it off. Never saw him again, never talked to him again. But at the end of the day, pretty cool story. Navy wins the game outright. He looks at me and goes, wow. I never told him who I was. My wife never told him. I think my wife might have said something as we were walking out, or my wife said something to his Asian woman who I was, but I never told Pete who I was, never dropped on. I was Brandon Lang.
Nothing better than taking the home the dog in the points and just, you know, having a night, you know, just winning outright. Nothing better feeling in the world than that. Not at all.
Handicapper. And being a guy that isolates dogs and has always told people that there's value in the underdog. And I've always told people, if you want a handicapping tip, most people when they handicap a game will always start with the favorite and work themselves to the dog. And I'm like, stop doing that. Start with the underdog and work your way to the favorite. Simply put, if you start with the favorite, they're a favorite for a reason. You'll talk yourself into the favorite before you ever get to the dog. But if you start with the dog and make a case for the dog and then work yourself to the favorite, you'll start to see more underdog than you normally would, and you'll start winning some more games because the line value is always with the dog. It's not with the favorite.
Obviously true. Absolutely.
Yeah, is there a stat on that, on taking the dogs as opposed to taking a favorite?
54%. Something around there, right? Right, Brandon?
Yeah, Vegas always, especially with your public and popular teams, always in basketball and football, they'll always inflate the line. Patriots, you're always playing a point and a half more. Last year with Atlanta, which didn't matter, they were a recovering machine. But for the most part, yeah, if you lay chalk based on your local book, you're offshore, they will jack up the line in that city. And there you go. So it's interesting how people love chalk. I would rather lose with the dog than lose with the favorite. I'm sorry. And it's cost me a few times. But in that case, if you release that dog and that dog wins outright, like you said, it's one of the best handicapping feelings in the world. When you're touting the dog and it wins outright, people are like, wow. Like Clemson, Alabama. That felt so good to be on the right side.
I had Clemson in that game. I picked him outright also.
Yeah, it just turned to win the game right there. Now, the flip side of that is,
it didn't look that way early on.
What's that?
That game did not look that way early on in the first quarter.
Buddy,
like, you were very nervous.
I was like, we're going to get blown out here. All right, I actually said to my wife, I'm like, well, the good news is we can turn this off at halftime and let's watch Housewives of whatever with the wife.
Well, it's the same thing about the Super Bowl, too, though. Same exact thing, because I had the over, and I wouldn't shut about the over. I'm like, the over's going to hit. The over's
going
to hit.
Well, we were going back and forth.
Oh, I know. And then, first two quarters, for half, I was like, this is fucking toast. And I had, and that was all I had, except, a few prop bets here and there. But then, of course, the Patriots just covered that 25-point deficit. And then, as much as I hate the Patriots, and they score in overtime, and I hit the over, I was like, well, that was bittersweet. But you know what? Free money is better, so fuck it.
And I hit on my box.
Yeah, if you know anything about me, my career is kind of based on the Super Bowl, 22-3-2. So I've only lost three in 27 years. It's kind of
Follow this guy during Super Bowl time, folks.
Yeah, to define my career. And I don't normally watch the game with people. There's so much pressure to hit the game. I'm usually at home in my man cave with my dogs. My wife leaves, or I go out of town and watch the game at one of my good friend's house. And I have your next podcast. We'll talk about some, I don't know how much time we have today, but some unbelievable Super Bowl stories of where I've watched the game and where I've ended up from.
Brendan, you don't like to watch the commercials?
No,
And watch Katy Perry at the halftime show. You don't enjoy that?
No, I enjoy it. But for me, I like to listen to the game. I like to watch the commercials. God. I just like to be alone. I don't want people yelling and whatever. But I really felt good about the Patriots, so I went to a Super Bowl party at my buddy's house, had a bunch of people over, and so I get there, and it's 80%, 20% Atlanta. So I'm like, okay, well, let me go find a room in this house to watch the game away from the general population, if you will. So I find one of his kids' rooms with the TV, and I'm like, good to go. Well, it's 10 seconds behind the main TV.
Oh.
So long story short, Patriots get the ball. They go 3-and-out. Blunt's got a hole right off right tackle on third, and when he tries to bounce it outside, they punt. And then next thing you know, Brady's driving him, pick six. Our Blunt fumbles. That's 7-0. Brady pick six, 14-0. And it just spiraled. And so I'm sitting there at half, and I'm like getting hammered, rum and ginger ale. Just getting it destroyed. And then they're down 28-3. And then it gets to be, 28-3. And then they drive, and they score in 28-9. And I'm sitting there going, okay, you know what? This could be interesting. And then remember the game, guys. They onside kicked it. didn't get it, 28-9, and you're giving Matt Ryan the ball at the 41. And I said to myself right there alone in that room, I said, they got to defend 6 yards of field position here. I said, because of Atlanta's time of the game, I said, if Atlanta gets three here and they get to 31, it's over. There's no way they come back from that. When they forced a punt there on that three and out, I go, oh, boy. And then they went on that drive and got three and got it to 28-12. And then I said to myself, I said, well, this is fourth quarter, eight
it's
minutes
a two-possession game.
Said, yeah.
Two-possession game. But I said at 8 minutes to go, they were no longer – I said if New England gets – I said at that point in my brain, if New England get – they're not going to stop New England. At this point, it was the worst defense that New England had seen in any of their Super Bowls. I said, so if New England gets the ball back twice, I just said based on the time, I don't know if they can. And I said, I'm going to need a turnover. And no longer did the word turnover come out of my mouth. They got the sack fumble. And I go, wow. And then they scored. And then they got the two-point conversion, 28-20. I go, wow, everything's in play here now. I go, total everything. And then Julio Jones makes the catch, and it's down to the 22. And people have different opinions of what happened next. Here's my opinion. You're the head coach, Dan Quinn. You get on the horn with Kyle Shanahan after Julio Jones makes the catch and say, Kyle,
run.
Football coach. Yes.
Run. That long sack knocked him out of field goal range.
Yep.
I don't care if we lose 2 yards on each running play. You run it three times, you make them use their timeouts, and I will roll the dice that our kicker can make a between a 42 and a 48-yard field goal to win us the Super Bowl. So he didn't do that. He just left it to his offensive coordinator. Now, I get that you want to throw on second and 12, but whatever you do, don't drop him back in a seven-step drop that's going to take him back to the 50. 33.
Oh, yeah.
And then a running back misses the – I mean, just everything. If you're going to throw there – three-step drop something quick because the real estate that you're dealing with is
– why would you even throw the ball there? It made no sense.
Because the clock stops. But, you give him more fucking time. You gave him 35
make,
seconds.
Right.
Exactly.
Brent,
if you had New England, you get the sack, you get the holding call, you get the ball back, Brady takes him down, and then I ran downstairs. Remember, I am hammered. And I looked at these Atlanta fans who were ready to commit suicide. And I said, listen, I'm yelling at the top of my lungs. You listen to me. I don't care what God you believe in, Elijah Muhammad, Easter Bunny, Santa Claus. You better pray to him right now that this is the biggest coin toss of your life.
Yeah,
because if you don't get this coin toss, it is over. And the Patriots go, heads. I said, you better start praying for tails right now. And the coin goes up. And it comes down head, and I go, game over right now.
Atlanta has to touch the ball there at least one time. I hate the overtime rule.
I know. I think it should be changed. I really do.
College rule, absolutely.
Yep. Or if that first team scores a touchdown.
You have to match it.
The other team gets a chance to match it.
100%.
If they do, then next score wins.
Especially in the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Yeah. They should do it for the Super Bowl especially. Not just, I mean, the regular season.
Absolutely.
I'm with you. Let's just rewind a hot second. Brandon Lang, we have here on the horn. The film Two for the Money, based on his life. I have a few questions here, sir. How did you even get the sports betting? How did you even get into that, and what was your first bet?
Parlay cards in high school.
Right.
$20 parlay cards. You know, I was making about $700 a
week. Those were the sheets, right?
Yep.
Yeah, putting in
little
whatever, and my dad would get them. He'd put them in for me, and I'd be hitting them. Pretty funny. I remember Jimmy the Greek with the tote board with Brent Musburger. And,
Channel 2.
Just had a
CBS.
I always had a mathematical mind with numbers. And I ended up in Vegas after I went in the Navy in 1987 and went to work for Jim Feist. And I was doing the score phone and doing Jim's 900 numbers, putting picks on his 900 numbers. And that's when the Pacino character heard of me and brought me to New York and gave me his 900 numbers. I made him about $10 million in 3 years. And he really never paid me what I was worth or what I deserved. And at the end of the day, just the pressure and the stress of doing it after 5 years, I just said, you know what, I'm out. I don't like it anymore. I hate it. And I walked away, 1995.
What got you back in and when?
So I go down to Australia, and I just kind of deprogram, getting a men's basketball league in Perth with a couple bartenders, and I'm just down there just hammering away hot Australian with my American accent. It was unbelievable. One of the greatest epic runs ever in the history of mankind.
He's like, fuck the money. Let's talk about pussy for a second here with the runs.
32 years old. And while I'm down there, like, why are you down here? I'm like, well, I was in a stressful business for 5 years, and I just wanted to get out. And they had told him about it. They said, mate, that'd make a great movie. And my kind of the light switch went off when you know, Adrian tells Rocky, just win. I'm like, you know what? And I had contacts in L.A. I had Caddy and a bunch of good friends in L.A. So I went back to L.A., and I networked my way in at Riviera Country Club as a caddy, where directors and producers and writers play golf. I figure if I just caddy for one of those, and over the course of 4 hours, I pitch my idea, I'll get it done. I mean, I literally that easy. So they made me sit in the caddy shack for a week before they gave me a loop. My first loop on a Sunday afternoon was Robbie Krieger, guitarist of The Doors.
Of course.
Hanging out with Robbie for 5 hours. And I remember calling my mom after that loop and saying, Mom, this movie thing's going to happen. And she says, how can you be so sure? I said, listen, if Robbie Krieger, guitarist of The Doors, is the first guy I'm caddying for out of the box as a new caddy, who else do you think's in this place? And sure enough, four months later, caddy for Rene Russo's husband, Dan Gilroy, pitched the idea. He loved it. He wrote it. Two for the money. 7 years later. That easy.
Rene Russo, she still holds up pretty goddamn well. She still is pretty smoking hot.
Guys, I'll tell you something. As hot as she is the sweetest, most genuine, dearest woman I've ever met other than my wife. And she is, and the great thing about it is if you've got the DVD of Two for the Money and you watch the bonus features, there's the real Brandon interview where myself and the writer, we sit down and talk about how I got the movie made and how Dan and I got it made. And the great thing about it is I never had a written contract with him. I had a handshake, and I made every dollar that I was supposed to make.
Nice.
Based on a handshake. I got in bed with two of the best people in Hollywood, Dan and Renee, who are very dear friends and made my dream come true.
That is an absolute, you know, lightning in a bottle right there. You all the stories you hear about Hollywood, everyone's getting fucked over this way and that way. It's awesome that you actually just, you know, again, got lucky as shit and caught people who, you know, two people didn't fuck you over. It's amazing.
Yep, and it's a town that happens. That happens a lot, you know. But I have a lot of really great friends in the entertainment business, and very powerful friends. And I have friends of mine that want to get scripts read, or scripts this, or scripts that. I have people I can get them in touch with in L.A., and they're always very well taken care of. And early 2018, we got a Netflix documentary coming out called Cappers, which is basically about me and my guys on the website and how we live our life. Andy Weiss, who did Life After Porn, one of the most watched Netflix documentaries ever, he's directing it. His brother did Entourage. So we're really excited about it. There's some great scenes, some great stuff in it. That'll be early 2018. So
that sounds really good.
In the meantime, it's just grinding away at these, you know, NBA playoffs.
I got a couple of questions though. Like, what's like your best winning streak and your worst losing streak? Can you tell me about that? Them?
Best winning streak obviously was 14 and 0 in the Super Bowl, and then the movie came out, and I hit 5 more in a row, so I hit 19 in a row, and then I finally lost one. It's the pressure of, you know, being Brandon Lang now and hitting it.
Which Super Bowl was that?
The first one I lost was Saints Colts. It was the first one I lost, and I'll go to my grave saying, if Hank Baskett's not thinking about trannies on that onside kick, and he gets that onside kick, I probably win that game.
But, I had this.
You know, now we know Hank loves trannies.
Yeah.
Who doesn't?
He had. Didn't he have a super hot fucking playmate wife before that?
Yeah. But
Kendra.
Was walking out of a Whole Foods and says that what he says is a couple of trannies where they're selling. He was looking for. They were looking for weed, and so he sold them weed. But the real story is he called one up off the internet and went saw her at his pad, and her name's Ava London. She's pretty hot actually, but he got busted with her. Her friend came too, and who knows what went on? Truthfully. But, you know, listen, when you love trannies, you're not focused on getting that onside kick. So that kind of buried me. And then the next year was Pittsburgh Green Bay. And if you remember that game, line on the game was 3.5, Green Bay minus 3.5. It's a 3-point game with 5 minutes to go, and Green Bay has 3rd down and 11 on their own 20-yard line. So if you know, based on your 19-yard line, under 5 minutes to go, you pick up a first down there and get it to the 30, you're going to take 2.5 to 3 minutes off the clock. And then you're going to face another big 3rd down. And if you complete that, you take a knee. That's exactly where the game's at.
Right.
So let me say it again. If you follow football and you watch football, if it's less than 5 minutes to go in the game and you're on your own 19-yard line, 2 first downs, even with timeouts, gets you to the 2-minute warning. With 1 timeout, which is what Pittsburgh had in the 2-minute warning, 2 first downs, it's game over. So they run a slant to Jennings. He catches it at the 30. Polamalu and Ike Taylor got it. He slips through, busts it up to the 41. Now you're in trouble. Why? Because now you gave McCarthy field position. He runs a quick draw to Starks. He gets it up to midfield. Next play, he throws a quick pass, gets down to the Pittsburgh 35, three and change to go. Now you know what's coming. They get it down to, like, the 10-yard line. They kick a covering field goal at a minute 23 to go to win by six. I will go to my grave and say, and they make that tackle, that game falls on three. So then I lost that one. Then I ripped off three more in a row. And then the only one, the other one I lost was the Denver-Seattle game, which was just the wrong side on the wrong
day. Yeah, I took Denver.
I had to see, I was saying Seattle all fucking week. And I actually live in – I live 10 minutes from Giants Stadium. And it was 50 fucking degrees that day. Because like I said Seattle's going to come in. They're going to smoke them. It's going to be cold. It's going to be perfect. You know, Manning sucks in the cold. 55 fucking degrees that day. I'm like, God damn it anyway. He can do it now. And what happened? The opening fucking opening line play from scrimmage. Whoops.
Well, that changed the whole game.
Yeah.
Because they you watch Denver, they played scared that whole game. Right after that fucking safety.
If you think about it, he almost cost Denver that Super Bowl win over Carolina as poorly as he played. He played atrocious. Their defense won that Super Bowl.
Yeah, he was just a shell of himself at that time. Everyone knew he was
also
done.
Another fun fact is the Seattle guys were saying after the fact, of course, that Denver never changed any of their audible, like their slang. They all knew the plays they were calling at the line when they were coming out, so they knew exactly what was coming. Denver never changed any of the fucking any of the codes, which that's it.
Brent, I got a question for you. Okay, Kevin and I talk about this all the time. Let's go back to that New England-Seattle Super Bowl and the call, of throwing, that pass inside,
on the two or whatever it
right,
was.
Right. I can understand. I don't buy Pete Carroll's explanation that, he had to throw the ball there. And even if you're going to throw the ball there, don't you throw a fade onto the outside shoulder to make sure that no one else catches that ball? What do you think really went down on that
play? I
say
you should have ran it, dummy, like everyone else fucking said.
Okay. Two things get lost in the shuffle here of that sequence. First of all, you have the brilliance of Bill Belichick. Seattle has only one timeout left. They run it on first down. They make a great, Mayo makes a great tackle and just clips his leg or it's a touchdown. Now he's down at the one. There's 35 seconds to go on the clock. Now, Belichick, you can hear it, and they tell him to call timeout. He says, no. So he forced Pete Carroll's hand. If he uses the timeout there, then, and remember, it's second down now.
You don't want to give Seattle a chance to regroup.
Right.
They can't run.
I could have sworn they had two timeouts at that point, though.
No.
I really thought they had two at that point. All right.
But from the 1 yard line, what Belichick did by not calling timeout was he forced Pete Carroll to make all the decisions now. And so there was a stat that they said that from the 1 yard line in for the season, they had ran Marshawn Lynch seven times and he hadn't scored once. They were 0-7.
But he's playing out of his mind at that point.
Or even a QB draw with Wilson, they could have done that too.
I completely get that. Right. Remember, you're dealing with the Super Bowl, you're dealing with 35 seconds, you're dealing with one timeout, what do you do? So Pete Carroll thought in his brain, listen, what we'll do is we'll throw here, stop the clock, then if I run it on third down and we don't get in, I can use my last timeout.
But why are you throwing a slant inside? Why don't you throw it outside?
Here's my answer to that. If you watch that play, and after we get done with this podcast, and you guys go find that play and you watch that play again, do you want to honestly know what the only thing wrong with that play was?
Someone fucking slipped on that play, I think, if I remember right.
It was too perfect of a pass. Oh. He led him so perfect in the hole that as his hands go up, he led him perfectly. It allowed Malcolm Butler to get around in front because the ball was in front. If Russell Wilson makes a bad throw there and it's a little behind him, Seattle's your Super Bowl champion. The ball was right. It was a perfect pass, led him right to the hole, which allowed Butler to get around his body and intercept him.
But why do you throw that pass to the least aggressive receiver?
Because that play had worked all year long.
I got to tell you, man, I respect you. I hated that call, and I agree with Francesa when he says it. It's the worst call I've ever seen in a Super Bowl.
Yeah, Bruce says the same thing, too.
Listen, I had New England, and I thought it was the greatest call in the history of mankind. Now, I'm going to tell you, arguably, one of the top three greatest stories you've ever heard in your life. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
So 2 years ago, I'm flying out to Vegas, and I'm going to catch a connecting flight through Houston. So it's Sunday, and I actually go to the Jags game, and the Jags game is over. They played the Atlanta Falcons, and I get on my plane to Houston at 7 o'clock at night. I'm sitting there in first class, and who sits down right next to me? But none other than the referee of the NFL, Bill Vinovich, who just did the Atlanta-Jacksonville game. So now he sits down next to me. I know exactly who he is, and I don't say anything, and I'm like, wow. I go, this is amazing. So he gets all comfortable, and I can see she brings – he didn't drink any alcohol. I think he got water. I'm having my cocktail, and I lean over, and I go, listen. I go, I was at the Jags game today. I thought you guys did an unbelievable job. I said, so listen, I'm a monster football fan. I played in high school. I get it. I said, if you don't want to talk, I said, I'm going to leave you alone and get some rest. I know you did the game today. But if you feel like talking, I have a zillion questions. And he kind of looks at me with a little grin on his face. He goes, no. He goes, I feel like talking. I said, all right, great. Let's go. So my first question was, I said, How did you get into it? He said, it took me 21 years to get in the NFL. He said, my dad was a referee, and after 20 years of doing college and stuff, he goes, my dad finally vouched for me, and I got in. He said, the background check was unbelievable that they do on these guys. So then we're talking, and I go, have you ever done a Super Bowl? He says, yeah. He goes, I did last year. I go, that's right. I said, you did the New England-Seattle Super Bowl. He says, yeah. I said, oh, my God, you had the best seat in the house for that game. He goes, what do you mean? I don't get to see the game. I go, what do you mean? He goes, you stand in the back of the offensive backfield. You get to see the whole game. He says, no, you don't understand. He says, I have two responsibilities, and that's it. He says, responsibility number one, if it is a running play, my eyes go to the right guard and the right tackle to make sure that they're not holding. He says, if it is a pass play, I have one job to do. That's to make sure that the left tackle is not holding. And then after the ball is thrown, I have to make sure the quarterback has been safe and there's no roughing the passer. He goes, that's it. And he says, the game moves so fast and things go so fast that after that running play is done, now I'm in my headset. Is there a holding penalty? Is there any penalty? Let's get to the next play. Here we go. He says, it's boom, 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 boom. If it's a pass play, there's no holding. Quarterback's unharmed. He said, is the pass complete? Are there no flags? Let's get set for the next play. And he said, and it's just like that for 64 minutes. I'm like, wow. I go, so what happened on the Malcolm Butler interception? He says, the ball is snapped. I look to the left tackle. The pass is thrown. He goes, and I hear this huge roar and this huge crazy. And I said in my headset, what happened? I go, the ball was intercepted. He goes, at that point, I got to figure out, oh, my God, is it clean or replay this and that? And he says, mass hysteria. He says, unbelievable. And I mean, just sitting there and hearing him talk about it, talking to the referee that did that game, I said, did you think they should have thrown there? He says, no, I would have run it two times. And I go, so what is the biggest mistake that you see coaches make? And he goes, every week in the NFL, me and my staff will sit there at a timeout looking at the clock and looking at these guys and saying they don't know how to manage the clock.
Absolutely.
Especially Herm Edwards.
Do not know how to manage. The biggest mistake, he goes, I don't know why they don't have a coach upstairs and his only job is to manage the clock for them because they got so much going on. I said, Bill.
Brandon, you there?
Oh, don't tell me we lost him.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding?
Brandon, the air?
Try and get him back.
I was still on the phone there. Brandon, you there? I'll call him right back.
Yeah.
We're almost out of time anyway, though. Hold on one second.
And here comes our producer.
One second.
Yeah. We got to finish up the story, and we lost the call here, George. That's what's going on.
Yeah.
It was a great story, too.
IJ Consulting. No one is available to take
your call. Oh, damn it.
Please leave a message.
All right, maybe he'll call back. But, just to wrap up his point, let me tell you something. When I was coaching, I coached high school. I mean, it's not nearly at the level these guys are. But the thing is, we always were watching the clock. It was, time management was always a big thing there. So, I mean, wow. I mean, in the NFL, that is becomes like the major thing, man. Like how many weeks, like, you know, inside 2 minutes, these guys are fucking up time management. He's 100% right.
It's right. Any kid who's playing Madden, myself included, everyone's like, time out, asshole, or no, why not let it go. Anyone who's playing Madden has more clock management skills than anyone who's in the NFL now. I shouldn't say anyone. A lot of guys in the NFL now have shitty fucking clock manager skills. Like I said, anyone who's played Madden, you know, more than 3 years of life.
I like how you equate your video game to real life.
I'm a 40-year-old guy who still plays fucking games here and there. Anyone who's played, you played Madden. Come on, you're not that old.
Oh no, dude. When I was a kid, I was.
Oh, here we go.
Here we go. We got to get the end of the story.
Brandon, you there, bud?
What up?
Okay, yeah, we're just about out of time. We went to hear the end of the story where Bill, you know, talked to Bill and said with the clock management shit.
Yeah, so he just said it's a clock management, and then I said, you know, I almost feel like you guys are missing quite a few calls, and he said yes. He said we actually need another official with the 5 wide receiver sets. He said it's making tough on us having only 7 guys. We need an 8th official. The problem is we don't have anywhere to put him. He goes, we thought about putting him back in the middle of the field, but he'd need a helmet because the game is outgrown with the size and the strength to have that 8th official in the middle of the field. So we're actually talking about it, but we really do need an 8th official.
What if they put somebody in the booth up in the sky?
Yeah, whatever it is. But he confirmed that the game is so fast that they're missing stuff. He said that I said, how'd you get the Super Bowl? He said, well, he says, every game you do, if you miss a call, it's a point. You get graded on a point system. So if your crew has a great day and the head referee has no misses, he gets a clean game. At the end of the season, the NFL referee that has the fewest points gets the Super Bowl. I said, how many points did you have New England-Seattle Super Bowl? He said 11 points for the whole year. That's how good he was that year.
Jesus.
To get the Super
He's
Bowl.
A good official too, Vinovich.
Yep. If you watch Bill's games, he's phenomenal. He really is. He's really, really good. He lets him play. His crew lets him play. It's pretty good. But I got to tell you, as a sports handicapper, and again, my high school baseball coach is married to Terry Collins' sister, manager of the Mets. Terry's known me since I was 8 years old, and he knows Terry. So once I kind of, you know, once you – here's one thing, guys, before I go. If you ever meet someone famous or you're going to meet someone famous, find out from someone you know that they know that can connect you to them. Because if you give them that common denominator, the next word out of their mouth, oh, how do you know him? Well, okay. That wall comes down and you're in their inner circle. If you can validate how you know that person that connects you to them, that guard comes down and they'll accept you for who you are. And once I said I knew Terry and explained how I knew Terry and his guard came down, and I got to tell you, of all the people I've talked to, what he told me was invaluable, and it's one of the reasons why I had a pretty good football season.
Brandon, you were fantastic today. We are definitely going to have you back. I will hit you up after this on Facebook, and we'll try and get another date. And this is flown by. Brandon,
much,
actually, real fast, where can we find you? Plug the website, plug your Twitter, plug whatever you want to plug.
No, just BrandonLang.com, LANG.com, BrandonLang.com. If you go there, I got a one-day free all-access pass. So you get a day free. You get 12 best bets, all my handicappers. This isn't like anybody calling you back or anybody hounding you. No, it's 12 best bets, one day free all-access pass. It's like an $800 value. It listens to my way of saying, hey, come to the website, look around. If you like it, have a free day on me. If you don't, thanks for stopping by. Good luck. Win a lot of money.
What's the website again?
BrandonLang.com.
BrandonLang.com.
In the champagne room at Spearmint Rhino.
Sounds like a plan to me, sir. Brandon Lang, thank you all so much for hanging out again. I'll talk to you in a little bit. Let's go. Appreciate it, Brandon.
Guys.
Thank you.
Yep.
Let's plug some stuff, Kevin.
Yeah, we got to run this through here. Let's see. Long Island City, Creek in the Cave, Wednesday night for me. Friday night, I'll be at Gotham Comedy Club at 7 p.m. And, of course, the ever-popular Comics Watching Comics is out, season 4. Episode 3 is coming out tomorrow, Tuesday. ComicsWatchingComics.com and on YouTube. Jeffrey Paul, how about yourself, sir?
April 19th and 23rd, Greenwich Village Comedy Club. And it is a good show like for people to come out to. I don't always say that. But April 27th, over in Jefferson, New Jersey, Tap House. That should be a great show.
Oh, Brennan show. That's a good one.
Yeah, it's a good one. So yeah, we'd love people to come out to see that one. Tap House on April 27th.
What a day we had today, huh, Jeffrey Paul?
Really interesting thing. I wish we had a couple hours with this guy.
You're not, we're going to have him back for sure. Guys, Kevin Goatee, Jeffrey Paul, Sportsbook Box Office Podcast. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Take care.